The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Moving Forward with Jen Sabin. The 21st century has introduced new norms and resources that are of immense value to businesses and their bottom line. Yet in business, we require relevance and innovation, not just more information. We need the true stories of what works and what does not work. Our program today will tell you what you need to know. The experiences, perspectives, and resources shared by Jen and her guests will make all the difference for you and your business moving forward. Now, here's your host, Jen Sabin.
Hello, hello, and welcome, everyone. Welcome to Moving Forward. This is Jen Sabin, and it's good to be together. It is really good to be together. I have to tell you about something that happened in a conversation. We've got some really rich stuff for today. So I was speaking with Jody Johnson, who many of you know was the source behind the Miami Growth Advisors, which is a great entity that's been supporting businesses in getting prepped and ready for the wave of economic opportunity happening in South Florida and Miami. $33 billion over the next 10 years. Ride the wave, right? That's amazing. Actually, Jody and I are offering a joint program together called Surfs Up, where we're going to be working specifically with some firms to really situate themselves and get ready. I'm very, very much looking forward to that. If you want more information about that, then you know, reach out. Jen at jensabin.com or call the show, whatever, and happy to provide that. However, there's something else that I want to reference. We were chatting, and she said she had read this book and heard the speaker, etc. I have to get the name of the book so I can provide it to you. How remiss am I? However, she said it had to do with small businesses and money matters and numbers and cash flow. And what she said that she thought I would love is the author put out there, part of the title had straight talk in it. So it was something about straight talk regarding business and numbers and money, small businesses specifically. And is this a long lead up? Are you just like, get to the point, Jennifer? Or as my brother used to say, land the plane? She said that if your business is not paying your wages and you a salary, then this author proposed you're living in a fantasy. So I really want to hone this down because so many small businesses aren't set up or structured where you're getting paid a salary or wages. Now, there's a lot of, let's be real, you know, writing off of certain things that may cross lines. I'm sorry, Mr. IRS, Mrs. IRS, if you're listening to this, but, you know, there's what is really just out of line, inappropriate, illegal, misappropriation. And then there's the where small business owners kind of dance in the shadows, right? So where it's not that it's illegal, but it's pushing the envelope. Like you're not going to get slammed for it, but it's pushing the envelope. So with that being said, if your business is not paying your wages and your salary, then you don't have a business. It's so interesting, and this is so key and so fundamental. So for those of you who are early stages and starting up, and even for some of you who are more seasoned, to really recognize this piece in terms of a legitimate business that exists outside of you. And when you're able to do that, you can work on your business in a different capacity. You really have a different relationship to the numbers. So consider this. I speak with a lot of new business owners, et cetera, and, you know, Are you building this business so that you can send your child to the university of choice? So God forbid, heaven forbid, somebody gets ill, that you're not asking what we could afford. You're asking, okay, who's the best person for us to go for this? That this is what's going to be put towards your retirement, that this is going to provide that new vehicle or that second car or the new house, right? That this part of our business as business owners, and I'm jumping right in with this because I think it's really important. So for some of you, you're listening, you're like, yes, we have that in place. Of course, my business pays me. It pays my salary. It pays my wages. And you know what that also means is that you're creating a structure. Because here's something I know, that if you're working your butt off and you're bankrolling the business, or you're doing lines of credit, or you second loaned your, I've seen so many people who've just, you know, gone through their 401ks or whatever it is, whatever the source is, and you're not paying yourself or have it set up there as a line item to pay yourself, then there's a place where you're not properly designing the structure and the integrity of the business, right? So consider this. Would you work, you know, for someone where you had to pay them, where you didn't get paid, but you had to pay them, hoping and someday that you get paid? Now, there's a difference between investing in yourself, and not being willing to deal with this. I've dealt with businesses, you know, where maybe the first, you know, their first paycheck is like $50 a month. But if they can't pay themselves $50 a month, then there's something that might not be working in that business that needs to be attended to, right? And it's not like you're going to live, because you cannot afford in most developed countries to, I'm not even talking survive, but to live on those nominal numbers, right? And part of what, you know, business is the sale and purchase of goods and services with intent to make a profit. So it was really interesting. And I like the, you know, the way that this author just put it out there. So for some of our listeners, you're very like, Jen, isn't this business 101? And for others, you might be feeling a little uncomfortable and a little squirmy. And it's time. It's time. If you haven't put that in place, if you're not living that, if that's not a reality, then do it. Go to an accountant. Go to SCORE. Go to the SBA. You know, talk to someone if you don't have that piece in place, or, you know, reach out to us. So this is just a key thing that I want to present. It's for some of you, it's relevant. For others, you're like, okay, what else you got, Jen? Well, what we have today are some other great topics. One of the things that I want to mention, and this is important too, is you know that I'm a huge, huge fan of OnStartups.com. If you've never looked at it, highly recommend it, OnStartups.com. And Dharmit Shah, who I think is just outstanding, shared recently that they have received the $32 million in HubSpot. And who has invested in their company, the $32 million, is Sequoia, Google Ventures, and Salesforce.com. Now, they had some really interesting, and I highly suggest that you go to OnStartups.com and read about this, but there are some lessons that they had in there that I thought were really important. You know, this isn't about the bubble of the .com where companies were raising money not directly to generate revenue, but to really put in place those points of service that could potentially generate revenue. Right, so they were looking to build the infrastructure and then create the platform that could possibly create the platform for generating revenue. This is very different. This is very different. And what's interesting is that in the world of the internet, there's a lot of room for people to do well, right? So in the world of the internet and commerce and business and products and services. There's a lot of room and space for businesses to do well. However, the winners win big. So they are really what would, you know, oligopolies. Now, that's where a small number of sellers dominate an industry. Okay? Oligopolies. From an oligopoly. Right? Look it up. O-L-I-G-O-P-O-L-Y. Oligopoly. And what it is where a small group of a small number of sellers, a small group of businesses dominate an industry. Okay? We've seen it in the auto industry. However, in what's interesting is in that instance, you'd have like the one person who has a huge chunk and the other two and three have great chunks as well. And the majority of the three or four companies have the mass market power, right? In the United States, it used to be the big three, Chrysler, GM, Ford. You used to see it in so many industries, Coke, Pepsi. In other industries, you'll see that the majority of the market share is distributed amongst two to three, three or four different sellers, different companies. However, in the internet, and this is really fascinating, what I'm going to name a company and consider who the second player is, who the third player is. If I were to give you 3 or 4 seconds, eBay, yeah, 10, 15 seconds. Who's the second player? Who's the third player in that category? eBay. Netflix. Who's the second? Who's the third in that category? Amazon. Who's the second? Who's the third? Right? Like, for the most part, and this is really great, and this isn't my stuff. This is Dharmic stuff, and I love it, you know? And this is, when we talk about in moving forward, things that are relevant, that we're introducing things that could add value, that's just not more kind of information. This is really, really good stuff to know, right? So for the most part, chances with you, like of those that you were kind of struggling like I did to come up with who was second. And number third was like, I don't even know who's under third. What is so interesting is that there in this space, there's the dominant player. There really is the dominant player. Like, they dominate. There's a number one dominant player. And everything else is just commentary. Now, it doesn't mean that there's not room to do really well. To do really well. Right? For a small business to do really well. When I talked about government contracting, even the, you know, I'm not even going to step into that conversation at the moment. But when we talked about, because as we speak, you know, the United States government is closed, but thank heaven in the United States, in a capitalist country, we have a private sector, not just a public sector, but a private sector, because if we did not, the country would literally be shut down in a different way. Similar what happened to the former Soviet Union, which was a public entity, and everyone knows, and all my listeners, and certainly Voice America knows that, you know, I am a capitalist. It's not just what I do, it's who I am. It's a philosophy I fundamentally believe in, and I also believe that we as members have a strong social responsibility to make sure that our world works, our communities work, whether it's literacy, whether it's the environment, etc. And at the same time, I am a capitalist with a capital C. So I digress. But in these spaces, there really is the dominant player. And there doesn't mean there's not room to do really well. What I was saying before about the government was when the government was tightening its budget, even though it still is and has been until it shut its doors, the largest purchaser of goods and services in the United States, that while contracts and budgets were being cut, that a government contract for a large provider such as a Honeywell, that could be devastating to Honeywell. However, for Jack Smith's business to be able to secure a $25,000, a $50,000, a low six-figure contract, you know, is the difference between your business potentially doubling or tripling its gross revenues, you know, for a small business, depending on the nature of the business. So it didn't mean that there wasn't opportunities available. Be careful of getting caught up in the broad sweeping generalizations and forget who you are as a business and where you can go. I'm going to extend this out to law firms just on this conversation topic, okay? So we're talking about Dharma Shaw. We're talking about in the internet, the big players are big, right? So what does this mean for me? When we talked last week about trends and understanding where things are going and what they're doing. So one of the things you want to look at is maybe you can't get in the space, but can you, or do you have a product or service that would enhance what they do? Can you become a subsidiary? Can you be rolled up? Can you be positioning your business to be acquired? Now, Dharma Shaw is positioning his business to be the number one leader, the dominant player, the dominant player, the dominant player. So if you look at someone who's going to position themselves to be a dominant player, then it's valuable to look at and listen to what are they doing. Now, some of it would be relevant to our businesses and some of it wouldn't be because their vision is very different potentially from our vision. However, when you're looking, though, if you can't go head-to-head, do you fill a niche or a need? So just as an aside, years ago, not that long ago, but years ago, I was brought in to work with one of the top 10 law firms in the world. Why? Because there were smaller firms that were nimble and quick and were starting to really impact the legal wallet because they were getting in there. They were getting in there and they were chipping away at revenue. One of the things that some of the law firms didn't understand at the time was leveraging existing relationships in the what I would call the cross-sell. Right? Everyone kind of acted in silos and they weren't really deepening and broadening and to make sure that also looking at, you know, who is the point of contact. You know, there's in terms of relationships. So small specialty firms were getting in there and starting to, again, chip away at business where those specialties that the larger firms had the competency for, but they weren't addressing those needs. So they weren't really looking at the holistic view of the relationship. Now, we're going to go back to Dharma Shaw, who just got $32 million. And it's not just getting $32 million, it's who made those investments. Because these are smart companies. We're going to be taking a break in a moment. And when we come back from that break, we're going to be talking about something else, which has to do with business models and being adroit and nimble and not being attached to something, but really being committed to it. So, and the other thing is, when I say that they've invested $32 million, Dharma's actually raised over $50 million. And isn't that a bit excessive? We're going to talk about that too and his response to why $50 million and where is it going? Is it going on sales and marketing? And the surprising answer is no. The vast majority of those funds are not going for sales and marketing and the ecosystem of a company. So we're going to discuss all those things when we get back. But for now, go into a break.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. Bob Pritchard has over 30 years of experience as a straight-talking business consultant and author working with some of the top Fortune 500 companies. Now he's come to the Voice America Business Channel to help you and your business. Tune in to the Bob Pritchard Radio Show for information about starting and successfully running a profitable business. From the movers and shakers to great marketing screw-ups, you can't afford to miss a single edition of the Bob Pritchard Radio Show. Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Business. Game-changing technologies are transformational, exciting, and disruptive for a reason. They shake up the status quo. They get you thinking about new ways to scale, compete, and grow. They move you in amazing new directions. You're invited to take a coffee break with Game Changers on Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time for our special series on today's top big data innovators. Learn about emerging big trends and technologies and how you can grow your business and profit. Startup Focus with Game Changers, presented by SAP on the Business Channel.
Health costs companies a lot more than just benefits, premiums, and health plans. Think about the underlying cost with not having healthy employees in the program, investing in the future. Creating Wealth Through Health, host Susan Doherty will discuss employee wellness programs, how staying healthy affects the bottom line, and how to get your team engaged in better health as a way of life. Tune in every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Eastern, on the Voice America Business Channel.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Moving Forward with Jen Sabin. We'd love to hear from you today. Please call in to our program at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. If you'd prefer, send an email to Jen Sabin at jensabin.com. And remember, that's two N's in Jen. Now, back to Moving Forward.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to Moving Forward. I'm Jen Sabin, and in the first segment of the show, we were discussing a lot of things. We were discussing, first of all, do you pay yourself a salary or wage? And for small businesses, this is really relevant. For mid-sized businesses, ideally, you have this in place. But for the small and early stage businesses, key, critical, listen to the first segment about some of that. Any questions, reach out. Jen at jensabin.com. That's two N's. Or call us. You know, definitely there to support our community, our Moving Forward listeners. Now, we were also talking about Dermot Shaw and the $32 million that was raised, HubSpot, from Google and Salesforce.com and Sequoia, and some of his views and philosophies. Now, it's interesting because he once wrote about in his blog, he's a really challenging guy to get on the phone, right? Like, this is an amazing guy, a challenging guy to get on the phone. He's very much more of an email tech communication person. And I am absolutely a raving fan. You know, I think brilliant in what he shares and says. So there are some things I want to tell you about that I'm telling you not to just for the sake of knowing about it, like, oh, interesting, but to listen to this and see if there's any way or consider if there's any way this can influence, improve, or impact how you're going about things. So what was interesting is, first of all, the man knew his numbers. They knew the cost of client acquisition. They knew their numbers cold. Do you know the cost? Do you know those? Do you know that? Do you know what it costs you to acquire a new customer? And do you know the relative potential gross revenue per client? Now, different industries, this looks different, right? So he knew his numbers. Do you know your numbers? And I promise you, when you know your numbers, you know your business. Now, there are different indicators to something's health and well-being, to that something has integrity and it's doing well, and to something's not, right? Some of those are qualitative and some of those are quantitative. Oh, you know, so-and-so is acting a bit lethargic. And then you might find out that their blood sugar is low or they have a fever. So there's actually some quantitative thing referenced against a sometimes arbitrary, but some kind of benchmark that indicates, and that benchmark indicates a certain level of well-being or health. And we have that in our business, which is why it's so key to know the numbers, right? And to be able to tweak those pieces. So if you know the numbers, then you can get really efficient in both projections and how to increase your increase those numbers, not just from a looking at a piece of paper or software, but in terms of where energy, attention, focus needs to go. What might be working, what's not working, what might be missing. So the man knows his numbers. They know their numbers in the company. The other piece was, and they were acquiring customers. They're acquiring customers. So what they did with the next round of cash was they went about improving the product. Now, when they had limited resources or certain resources that had to be allocated, now they've got enough to deal with it all. They didn't put that money towards marketing, sales, and customer service. Now, there was already an existing solid standard because they're acquiring customers. They have a good product, and the other pieces were good, but they didn't go look to improve that area. So, in other words, to lower the cost of marketing, very often what you might do is increase the, you know, broaden the audience, and all of a sudden the quality, you're not as discerning or disseminating in terms of who you're acquiring as a potential client or who the prospect is. So what they did, though, and this is really interesting, and remember, this, what's so important is to understand the ecosystem of this. They're not doing this without the other pieces being handled, right? So they've got good product, good customer service, good marketing and sales, and they know their numbers. So then they're taking money, real cash, real time, real energy, real resources, and they're putting it in improving and enhancing the product. Because their point is, with those other pieces at a place that it's good, might not be stellar, not where they want to be for sure, but it's working. So what they do is they go to improve the product. Why? Because with a better product, customer service's job becomes easier. Marketing is given a stronger platform. And sales are also easier. Right? So it wasn't about one of the other pieces at the expense of the other, marketing at the expense of sales, at the expense of customer service, right? Putting resources towards one and then, you know, potentially weakening the other two, right? So if you put a lot of money and resources and attention on sales and you're increasing your sales, you better make sure that your customer service is ramped up and ready to support those sales, right? And that your marketing team and the marketing is consistent with that as well. So there's an interesting dynamic. There's an interesting dynamic there. What they did is they went into the product. When is the last time that you really looked at your product? I mean, really looked at it and looked at it from the consumer point of view, from the marketing point of view, from the customer service point of view. So this is a key piece. And sometimes we actually have a great product, but we get complacent. Last week when I talked about trends, there might be an opportunity to leverage. There might be an opportunity to reposition your product or to open it up to a demographic that you haven't previously opened it up to, that where there's a trend. Because I will tell you, how many of us who are listening, if we're not that audience, know people who are seniors, and when I'm referring to seniors, I'm referring to 70 and older, who have iPhones, right? And who are going to the Apple store and taking the classes, who are having the FaceTime with their grandkids or whatever. Now, this is a generation that this is new technology. It's new technology for everyone. But this is not a generation that necessarily, I mean, I grew up with an electric typewriter, and I've got a couple decades before I hit that space. But certainly my parents, my mother was in her 70s, my father's in his 80s, have their iPhones. That was not necessarily the initial target demographic. And what's interesting is in focusing towards that demographic, Apple tweaks certain things. They tweak certain things, you know, that were consistent with their brand, But certainly for most of those, that community, they want to go to a physical location and they want to get support. They'd rather go to the store. They want to speak to someone face to face. They want someone to show them. They're not necessarily looking to go online and watch a video, although that might even change soon for many. But does this make sense? Are you kind of nodding your head in recognition? Some of you might be saying, not quite, Jen. You're off the mark here. Right? So, but these things are so key. And this is the working on our business. This is the working on their business. And, you know, how Dharmit puts it is, you know, breaking out of that robbing Peter to pay Paul conundrum. The way to do that, invest in the product. Marketing, it's easier job, more referrals, customer experience, so sales can close. The product demos are singing. Customer service has an easier job because they're happy with the product. There's less cancellation. There's less bugs. There's less defects. We have had some companies who didn't invest in their product, and their customer service was getting slammed. And people started, you know, from my experience, it was companies like HP. Now, unfortunately, there are other companies like Kodak who has amazing customer service, stellar, brilliant customer service. But they were still attached to film, you know, film as a medium. So, you know, in terms of customer service, top. So we're actually seeing how that, you know, there's that ecosystem. Once again, there's that ecosystem. There were people who stayed longer, who wanted Kodak products because of the customer service. You know, it's L.L. Bean, another company with great customer service. Great customer service. You know, good product, customer service leads to longevity. Now, so if we were going to the ones that didn't have customer service, what happens is, one, let's be real, as a consumer, you complain. You tell your friends, or somebody's looking for, especially in this industry where people, you know, there is a pretty big turnover. You're looking, who doesn't know someone who's looking to get a new computer or a new phone or something of that nature, right? Or for a particular type of software. So there's something that happens exponentially, and I'm not even going into the power of social media. I'm not even going into somebody, you know, going online and Google or Ping or Ding, whatever it is, banging to find out how consumers feel about this product. There's a different level of transparency. But I'll tell you, when you have a positive customer service experience, you're in a different space. You're in a different space. So these are things to consider in regards to your product or service. Really, you know, really valuable things to consider. And this has to do with such business basics. Such business basics. I went to a website recently. I contacted a company by the phone, and I was contacting them through their outside line. And there was a message, we are not available today because we're all in a training. The entire company, and this is a pretty big company. This is a consumer brand that is no small company. And they were in a customer training. So their entire customer service, you couldn't reach anyone in the company through their outside main phone that day. There was no way to get through to anyone. So you could get to them via email. Really interesting. Could you imagine calling up a major company with a consumer brand that has extremely broad outreach that you would not go into a supermarket or a store and not see their product, and you go to call them on their outside line and they say we're in training? That's a big deal. That's a big deal. And they gave the hours that they were in training. So during that time, you could not call them or get through on that line. So I called them back today. This is regarding a charitable event, and I'm on a committee, and we wanted to reach out to the organization in regards to involvement in this event. So it wasn't like I had the name of the CEO or the president. You know, I wasn't even going in. I was just going in through customer service. Who's the person that handles this? Who's the person on the department? Because that company structure is not set up that way on the site. And I have to tell you, the person I spoke to said that the company, while they used to do those type of things, are no longer putting their resources. However, this team member was so stellar, took the information, is presenting it to the committee because they do consider certain things, But I was so taken care of, shared where that time, energy, and resources, where that was going to, which is a commitment of the organization. So they're really kind of walking their talk in terms of, we've taken this on as a company mission and impacting this particular area. And now that's what we're using, what we used to use to do general community outreach for. Makes it all right, perfect, yay you. Integrity, consistent. I mean, think about that. That's an amazing company experience. And at the same time, you know, to notice for ourselves in our business, how do customers experience customer service? What is a customer service? If someone has an issue, a problem, a concern, a consideration, how do they resolve it? And have you ever really talked to anyone in terms of how to resolve it? Have you ever had any secret shoppers come in? Give us a call. We have a great program for that. But have you ever had any secret shoppers come in, or just to have, you know, your cousin call up and to find out what their experience is? What is their experience? Is it positive? Is it negative? You know, do you know how your team treats someone who isn't necessarily who's a difficult customer? Didn't say anything offensive, didn't, you know, wasn't crossing the boundary of that, but is a difficult customer? Do you know how they handle them? Have you even trained your team on how to handle them? So these are some really, really, really key things. These are some key things. And as per usual, we're kind of going down a tangential path, right? Think about it. How many times, and I didn't intend for this to be a customer service conversation, but we're going there, right? How many times have you been at an establishment, been a consumer, used a product or service, and even though the product or service may have been fine, your experience of poor customer service or being treated in a particular way, and that could even be in a department store. You know, you went in to purchase something and you had such an unpleasant experience that either you left without purchasing, you didn't purchase more, which you possibly would have, or you actually made a decision upon leaving that that was the last time you were going to utilize or be a consumer of not just that product, but that store, that retail center, that website. You know, after what happened in dealing with this, I'd never go to them again. And you may have even liked what you purchased there. So this stuff is so key. And, you know, often we don't put ourselves in the actual position of that. We don't put ourselves in the actual position of it. Now, we're going to be taking a break in a moment. When we come back, we are going to talk about that, you know, being adroit, when I said before, not being attached to it, where, you know, noticing what you have in your vision and mission that could be tripping you up. And we're also going to talk a bit more, since I've opened up the proverbial Pandora's box, about customer service. And take a moment and think about experiences you've had where it was so negative or not positive that you would not be a consumer of either that establishment, of that store, of that restaurant. And it wasn't necessarily that the food was that bad or that the product you bought had a problem with it. It was the experience you had with the people who worked for that company. Right. Did you think of one? Amazing, isn't it? We don't forget. We don't forget. Now, do you want somebody imagine if someone was thinking of your company, of your product and service, of your team? Oh, my gosh. So what can we do to make sure that doesn't happen? When we come back, we'll also address that. But think about it. Could you imagine if someone was thinking about your company?
Business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
As your business grows, are you growing with it? Do you have the right balance of time, attention, work, and personal life? Take the growing pains out of growth and tune into The Business Edge with Marcia Zeidel. If you are spending most of your energy managing problems rather than focusing on taking your business to the next level, our program will give you the steps you need to make sure you have everything in place for forward-thinking business leadership. The Business Edge is heard every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
If you currently or aspire to serve on a board or work in a leadership capacity for or with a public or nonprofit organization, where can you turn to get the best advice and practices? How about Leadership Matters with Dr. Cheryl G., Jenny Frumer, John Janetta, and Linda Shube? Our program discusses challenges facing both public and nonprofit leaders. Don't miss these practical solutions and tips to enhance your leadership style and effectiveness. Leadership Matters airs live Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel.
Want to be empowered to take your leadership skills to the next level in your business? Tune into A Sharp Outlook, Best Practices for Success, with host Angela Sharp. Using industry-specific materials, toolkits, and expert guests from all facets of business, our program will empower you to develop a strong core in your business leadership, infrastructure, growth, and technology. A Sharp Outlook airs live every Thursday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time, 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Moving Forward with Jen Sabin. We'd love to hear from you today. Please call in to our program at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. If you'd prefer, send an email to Jen Sabin at jensabin.com. And remember, that's two N's in Jen. Now, back to Moving Forward.
Hello, hello. Welcome back. Welcome back to Moving Forward. So in our last, before we left for break, we were talking about, customer service. We're actually talking about using resources to improve your product, but that is when you're at like a solid, it's not that you don't want to be improving our products. It's not that we don't want to be improving our products, but we were talking about in a specific context, you know, that marketing is solid, that sales are solid, that customer service is solid, and you've got a good product. Now it's time to improve the product. You improve the product, it makes all those other pieces easier. Right? But it's not just having the product and poor sales. I mentioned the linchpin of customer service. Customer service is so key, and it's often one of the most neglected areas. One of the things that I asked before the break was to think about and consider when you've had a negative experience with a team and a sales team. Not a sales team. Like when I say a sales team, I mean the front line, right? Like maybe you're in a restaurant or you're in a department store. So it's not necessarily that it's a sales force that's going out and tapping into you or representing. Or you've had a problem with something and you went to customer service and it was really a negative experience. And you may like the product, but you're hesitant to either use that product in the future because of the customer service. Because of the service that you receive as a consumer, because of your interactions. Well, one of the things that I would offer is for many companies, that's training. That is training. That is 101 training. And then it's also following up and monitoring. You know, Dermot Shaw and his company, and that's what a lot of this conversation, you know, is stemming from, because I'm just so excited for them. And I just really, really, if you haven't checked on startups.com, it's valuable to already existing business. You don't have to be a startup to read this. I promise you. They have a customer happiness index. They have a customer happiness index. If your customers are unhappy, then we've got problems. We've got real problems, right? If a business is a sale or purchase of goods and services with an attempt to make a profit, who's doing the purchasing? Where's the cash flow coming from? You want happy customers. You know, there's that trite saying, happy wife, happy life. How many of you know that to be true, right? So, you know, how do you train them? And are you training them just as like a generic training, or are you even tapping into what are some of the things that they've had happen that they didn't know how to handle? Remember I once shared with you in Service America, it's a book that was written and it talked about how British Airways, when they asked their customers what were most important to them, one of the things was to be able for the person at the desk to be able to put them on a different flight if their flight was canceled, even on a different airline, if their flight was canceled or there were substantial delays. And they had never been trained to do that. That wasn't part of their system. That wasn't part of their ability of what there was to provide. And that was what was most important to the majority of their customers, especially with certain types of flights. So, you know, it's about also getting connected to what you have and what you're offering and what the customer experiences. So, training. Training is key. Not just training like, oh, they've been trained, but also following up to make sure that they know how to handle it and apply the training. This isn't just about learning. We can learn a lot of stuff that's very different than living it. Lots of people know how to lose weight. That doesn't mean that they're effective in losing weight. That doesn't mean that they're living it. They just have the information. So there's something really key and fundamental here. Can you hear me yet on a soapbox? So what do you have in place for that? How do you have that set up? And some places don't even really, really deal with it. Now, there's certain laws about return policies, et cetera, but not the experience. And some service professionals don't even talk about the exit strategy. What if someone isn't happy or satisfied? Well, you make good on that, but what's the reason they're not happy or satisfied? Is it because you didn't deliver what you said you would, or is it this a difficult customer? You've got to have some discernment. You really, really important to look at this piece in the kind of the construct of your business and to make sure that everyone who's part of your organization is set up to be the most positive, you know, point of contact for anyone who is a potential customer, a user, or just anyone who deals with your organization, who deals with your business, who deals with your enterprise, right? Okay. Now, there's something I want to talk about which is really cool. There is a company called Granite, and they were in, like, telecom. And they were going about the business the same way that most companies do. And they actually, I believe their revenues are like $800 million. Which is five times, significantly more than their peers in the original trajectory that they were intending to go. But this is really interesting. When a client in their early years asked Granite to consolidate their landline phone bills. So picture this. Let's say you have a retailer and they've got a lot of different stores. Each one of those stores has a phone system and gets a direct paper phone bill because that's how they're sent. Now, if you were to take this nationally or regionally, right, that is a big deal in terms of different rate plans and different sort, you know, and how that's all set up, because we all know that with the deconsolidation of Ma Bell, when, you know, or some of you might not know that there used to be a monopoly and then it changed and then they came up with all these regional and inter, and, you know, this is not the world of Vonage or Skype or anything like this. These are, you know, establishments that have landline phones. So this was a pretty big task to say one yes to, and two, it was taking the company in a different direction in terms of using their resources, using their people, using their, you know, this was a different project. So essentially, by saying yes to this, they were basically abandoning, and if you want to know more about this, read Kaihan Krippendorf, another, I love being able to share these thought leaders with, but not just thought leaders like, oh, here's some information or here are the 10 best ways to do this, but people who are sharing case studies and their own experiences in ways that are relevant and impactful. And that is what the show is all about. Right? So that's what I want for you. So consider this. You are sitting across from a client. That client asks you to do something. You say yes to that. You're actually changing your business model. You're changing the service you offer. Right? So they had to make a decision. Are they going to do what they originally, on the business, what they thought they were going to do in terms of their business, or were they going to change their business model and be a consolidator of phone bills? Now, there were a lot of compelling reasons not to say yes, to say no. No, thank you. Landlines? When I talk about trends, landlines, but remember when I talked about trends and I said that doesn't mean that the old infrastructure is completely gone. I said a trend does not mean that business as usual, it might change, but that doesn't mean that it's gone. A trend is something that is happening now, right? It's not a someday, and most people bet very heavily on the short term and underestimate the value of the long term. Like they overestimate the profitability of short term, distinguishing trends from fads. Stay with me. We're distinguishing trends from fads. We're talking about something that's a trend. So here's a company that's being asked about on landlines. Well, they made their decision, and they had to, if they did, they had to let go of everything they had in place, their business plan, everything, everywhere they were going. It would take a big deal. For example, Pennsylvania alone, Pennsylvania in these United States, 1,600 different rate plans. Imagine gathering and keeping these for the 50 states and consolidating these, et cetera. You know, one customer with 4 to 6 different lines per store and a couple thousand stores would get tens of thousands of phone bills. Right? By paper. So they decided to do it. And it is amazing. $800 million in revenues. They own that space. They are the ones. Remember when I talked before about Netflix, Amazon, that there is one dominant player, not the oligopolies where you had, you know, Ford, Chrysler, GM, but they own that space. So there's a couple things to take from this story, right? And they serve 81 of the Fortune 100 companies. So are you willing to change course, to pivot towards an opportunity? And are you also open to really using discernment and looking at what other people abandon? Many businesses come to a crossroads. Some of you never do. But are you willing to pivot to seize on an unexpected opportunity? You know, are you? I don't know. Some of you have never been faced with it, but just this really opens up a way of thinking and looking at things. Are you willing to pivot to take advantage of an unexpected opportunity? And where have people abandoned certain things that there really is an opportunity? Like it might not come to you, but you might actually see it. Something to think about. Something to think about. And this isn't just to throw it out there to shake it up, but this is actually for you to recognize what you see for your company, right? Is it about doing business a particular way, or is there an opening for innovation in there? Is there an opening to be mobile that way? I don't know. We touched upon a lot today. We definitely touched upon a lot. And what a couple things that are fundamental for your business that could either prevent a tightening of positive cash flow or can enhance and support growing a positive cash flow. One is, you know, are you tuned into the relationship between your product, your marketing, your sales, and your customer service? And specific emphasis upon customer service. Are you making, are you looking at making sure your product is great so that the rest is much easier? But also to recognize what is the experience that people have when they come in contact with your business? What is the experience that people have? And in some ways, that dovetail into branding, which we might touch upon next week. You know, the consistent experience of your business. Is it consistent? And do you even know what's going on? Like, do you are you presuming or do you really know? And how can you find out? You know, having conversations, meeting with different team members, talking about what was challenging or tripped them up or, you know, et cetera. Because they are telling people, but they might not be telling you. And also, you know, hopefully for each and every one of us who is listening, our business is paying us a good wage, that we're actually building wealth from building our business. No kidding, building wealth. So any questions, any comments, your thoughts, your resources, please, 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 jen@jensabin.com, call the show, stay connected. This is just an extraordinary community. And for each and every one of us, right? Look around, like all of us. Let's have this week be a moving forward week. Take care, everyone.
Thank you again for tuning in to Moving Forward. Please join Jen Sabin again next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Make your week a moving forward week.